before the court this morning, this case. The first is whether the entry of default, and then subsequently the entry of default judgment against me, violated the letter and the spirit of the court rules and operated as a denial of procedural due process. And the second was whether the court erred with the award under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act of $500,000 to the class and $1,000 in actual damages to Mr. Davis. From February 2000 until January 2002, I was employed as a general counsel for Goldman and Company, a firm in New Jersey that specializes in seeking restitution for vendors and merchants who have been defrauded by individuals who have presented NSF checks and checks written on closed accounts as payment for goods and services. Sidney Davis, the plaintiff in this case, wrote a bad check, $91.73, to Burlington Coat Factory on December 4th of 1999. He never made restitution. On about March 15th of 2000, Burlington Coat Factory sent his check to Goldman and Company to obtain restitution. On August 11th, Paul Anderson, an account representative at Goldman, directed that a demand letter be sent to Mr. Davis. He incorrectly selected the attorney letterhead from a menu of possible letter formats on the computer. He selected my letter format, or my letterhead format, for his letter to go out. So a demand letter with his signature block on my letterhead was mailed to Mr. Davis. This matter had not been transferred to the legal department, and I had had no prior or subsequent contacts with Mr. Davis. No other similar letters were sent to other debtors that we've been able to learn to this point. On July 6, 2001, a class action complaint was filed in the district court, only against me, not against Goldman, for several violations of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act.
Was Goldman mentioned anywhere in the letterhead?
Yes, it was, sir. I was served on August 6, 2001. On August 27th, my motion to dismiss was received and stamped by the clerk of the court. This motion was then misplaced or lost, misfiled, for approximately 29 days. It appears that it was misfiled because in my letter to the clerk, the incorrect case number was on my filing letter with the clerk. This incorrect number that was on my letter was copied from pleadings that had been sent to me by counsel for the plaintiff. Counsel for the plaintiff subsequently complained to me by fax that I did not attach a notice of presentment, and since my motion to dismiss was more than 15 pages, that I needed a motion to waive the 15-page limit. He further contended that my arguments were frivolous and threatened to have me sanctioned. These arguments were good faith arguments designed to bring about a change in existing law and are permitted pursuant to Rule 11. He further contended that the clerk's office had no record of the documents that I had mailed to them, even though I had a received stamped copy. After several days and numerous phone calls to the clerk, the case manager, and Judge Lindbergh's secretary, Sandra Book, they were able to locate this file. Ms. Brook indicated that I needed to file a notice of presentment and a motion to waive the 15-page limit for a brief. She indicated because of these defects that a status conference had been set for October 4th on 2001. I asked her specifically if I had my corrected documents back in the court by the day before the hearing, whether or not a personal appearance or appearance via telephone was going to be required. She clearly indicated that if the documents were back in the court the day before, no personal appearance or telephonic appearance was going to be necessary. On about October 1, the plaintiff moved for the entry of default. The corrected documents were received by the clerk on October 3. On the morning of October 4, just to be sure, prior to the time the hearing was supposed to start, I called Ms. Brooks and reminded her that the court had received the corrected documents, and I left my phone number with her where I would be standing by in the event that the court wished to speak with me. The clerk, during the hearing, notified the court that the corrected documents had been received. My motion, nevertheless, the court entered default. I subsequently moved for a reconsideration. I flew out to Chicago for the reconsideration argument, and my motion was denied. Prior to the date set for the damages hearing, I filed an opposition to the certification of the class, and I provided an affidavit setting forth income, liability, and asset information. The court disregarded this information and awarded the class $500,000, even though I have a negative net asset, a negative net worth due to my law school loans, and they awarded Mr. Davis $1,000 in actual damages.
How did you submit your financial status to the district court?
It was attached to my opposition to class certification. It was an affidavit in support, which included information on income, liability, and assets. Anyway, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act limits awards in class action cases under, I think it's 1692K, to $500,000, the lesser of $500,000, or 1% of the defendant's net worth. If you have a negative net asset and net worth, you would assume that there would be no award possible. The amount of the judgment entered here would require that my personal net worth be $50 million, and if that were true. Prior to the deprivation of life, liberty, or property, the Fifth Amendment requires that there be due process. A $520,000 judgment for violation of a federal statute clearly is a deprivation of property. As to what...
Now, you were aware, were you not, that the plaintiff had filed a motion for default, motion to enter a judgment of default?
Yes, sir.
And did you respond to that?
No, sir. I was told that by getting the papers back to the court prior to the hearing of the status hearing, that was the key thing, and that everything else is going to be moot.
What do you mean everything else is going to be moot?
Well, I mean basically the motion for default was based upon my not having the papers back there, and if I had the papers back.
Wasn't it pretty careless of you not to respond to the motion for default judgment?
Your Honor, my understanding, having had the discussion with...
But with a discussion with whom? With this clerk?
With the judge's secretary, Your Honor.
With the secretary?
Yes, Your Honor. Basically, she indicated that everything was contingent upon getting the papers back to the court on time.
Yeah, I know, but you know, if your opponent has moved for judgment, if you don't rely on a secretary to say you don't have to not to respond... That's skating on thin ice, isn't it?
Your Honor, all I have to go on is what the representations of the court were.
These were oral representations by a secretary?
Yes, Your Honor, and it had to deal with what the court's procedures were.
The motion had been filed to enter a default judgment against you. You didn't respond to it.
Yeah, it was my understanding that the
judge was not pleased with that.
Your Honor, my understanding was that my getting the corrected documents back to the court was the response that the court was looking for. The procedural due process that is required down to the line of procedural due process cases has always been that there's a requirement for a notice and a hearing. If the hearing has to be appropriate to the nature of the case, and that the procedural, or that the process must be meaningful. Controversies relating to the FDCPA are conducted in the federal district courts. The meaningful process which is due is set forth in the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Rule 8E1 provides that a pleading shall be simple, concise, and direct, that no technical forms or pleadings or motions are required. Rule 8F directs that all pleadings shall be so construed as to do substantial justice. The entry of default and default judgment when responsive pleadings had been filed with the court and served on the plaintiff's counsel, and which responsive pleadings had defects corrected and returned to the court prior to the status hearing, denied me the constitutionally guaranteed procedural due process to which I'm entitled. The default was entered for hypotechnical defects. The errors were not substantive, and Mr. Davis suffered no prejudice from them. If making any kind of procedural administrative error were to be the standard whereby the merits of controversy were decided, then plaintiffs committed the first error by putting the wrong case number on documents, resulting in their misfiling. Therefore, his case would be dismissed. That would not constitute substantial justice either. Other errors were made. The court never certified the class, and the court never appointed Mr. Phillips class representative as required by Rule 23. I see I'm out of time here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hutchins. Mr. Phillips?
May it please the court. Virtually all of counsel's argument about what happened is the whore of the record. He did not bring any of this up by affidavit. Most of it isn't even in the pleadings or his allegations he tried to make in the district court.
Did you have the wrong number on the original case file?
No, not on the complaint.
The one that was sent to him?
No, not on the complaint. There was an error made on a discovery request sent to him, but not the complaint. The complaint was correct. The complaint was always
correct. But you gave him the wrong number someplace.
I did, Your Honor.
Okay.
In a discovery request, a wrong number got entered, a number got transposed. But the complaint was correct because the complaint is what you filed on 20 with the file stamp right there that you're given by the clerk.
Mm.
Now, he didn't get defaulted just because his pleading got misplaced and he's off on this quest with the courtroom deputy. It's not the judge's secretary. He's got that wrong. Ms. Brooks is Judge Lindbergh's courtroom deputy. He got defaulted because he ignored several warning shots from us that we weren't required to give him. We told him, this thing's deficient, get it on file, get something going. We don't willy-nilly run off and file for default motions. He ignored us. Then we got a minute order from Judge Lindbergh setting the case for a status hearing on October 4th. We sent that to him and said, the status hearing's up on October 4th. Here's also our proposed discovery request. Contact us to hold a Rule 26 conference because I know that Judge Lindbergh wants to get the cases moving. He wants the discovery moving. He wants a face-to-face meeting between the plaintiff and the defendant. These are all things that the judge requires. And instead of getting that meeting or let's hold a discovery conference at such and such a time or I fixed my motion, we got back the famous smiley face. Our
fast this is about Ms. Brooks, is that it?
Ms. Brooks.
What she told him. You say he did not, there's no affidavit or anything that submitted in the district court about this?
There's no affidavit, Your Honor.
In his brief?
It was in a motion to reconsider.
Motion to reconsider.
But not supported by an affidavit. Certainly didn't ask Ms. Brooks to say anything. It just, you know, I don't know what he did. But I do know, let's say he did all that, okay? He had a motion for default on file because he refused to respond to us and refused to get his motion on file. Now, me, I'd show up if there's a motion for default, or I'd call opposing counsel and go, yeah, is this right? He didn't do any of that, Judge. Instead, he refiles whatever this concoction was he was trying to put on file, notice it up for October 10th, and then he doesn't even show up to present his motion. I'm there in court all alone again. Okay? Then he brings his motion to reconsider, and instead of coming hat in hand to the district court, he's positively defiant. I think at that point, Judge Lindbergh would have let him off the hook, too. I know I wouldn't have put up a strenuous objection if he came in and goes, here's my answer, here's a real motion to comply.
Well, what you say was defiant, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, positively defiant to the district court judge, that nothing was his fault. I mean, you know, there's a point to coming.
He didn't present any abject apology for his rotten behavior.
I would say that that's pretty much correct. Well, he certainly didn't come in with his deficiencies corrected.
Before I forget the point, was there a certification of the class?
No, there wasn't, Your Honor. There was a default, and the complaint had pled a class. Our position is the class is certified by that default judgment.
By the default judgment.
Right.
That's the predicate for the $500,000.
That's correct. Well, there's two predicates, Judge.
Does the trial court know how many of these letters are out, how many people might be in the class?
We don't know that yet because he wouldn't cooperate or comply with the first prerequisite to getting the discovery on that issue, holding a Rule 26 conference. Now, if the judgment is affirmed, that's what we're going to go after in post-judgment proceedings. Who are the class members? Where's the money go to? Things like that. But, you know, he just didn't do anything right. And it wasn't a case where he's fumbling around or he's a typical pro se litigant. He's an attorney. And as Judge Lindbergh pointed out, all these rules that he's unfamiliar with and doesn't know what's going on, they're all available with anybody with a computer and a phone line. The district court's rules are online. You can get them at a law library. You can find them all over the place. And certainly, we tried to help him out. We told him, this is wrong, fix it. Once again, this is wrong, fix it. Doesn't show up to contest the default motion. He gets defaulted. Doesn't show up for his noticed up new motion to dismiss. It gets struck. We file a brief in support of damages. He doesn't show for the hearing. He doesn't contest it. I don't know what the brief in opposition to class certification was. There wasn't an issue about class certification pending due to the default. So frankly, I'm not sure.
What about the prove-up and the amount of damages, though? I mean, he said he filed something that showed that he had a negative net worth.
Sure, he cobbled together something that alleged he had a negative net worth. It was wholly conclusory, and it wasn't in response to the damage brief, not at least as far as I knew it was. It was a brief in opposition to class certification. I mean, his net worth, him just saying so, isn't enough.
Was it filed prior to the prove-up?
I'm not sure the date, Your Honor. I believe it was, but I'm not sure. I'd have to check the record, the docket on that.
Did you say the last time that Goldman and Company doesn't exist anymore?
Well, this is another thing. That'd be the whore of the record. You asked me that question. My answer was the reason I did not sue Goldman and Company is it's a fiction. It's a second cousin of Harvey the Rabbit. It doesn't exist anyplace. That's why I sued the only individual I could identify, which was Mr. Hutchins, whose name was splayed across the collection letter. If there's nothing further, Your Honors.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Phillips. Mr. Hutchins, your time expired, but we'll give you another minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. When I was notified of deficiencies, I sought right away to correct them. There was no languishing, there was no ignorance of what was going on, and I was trying to make the corrections. I relied in good faith on representations by the clerk's office and by the clerk of the court as to what I needed to do then and what I needed to appear for and what I didn't need
Why
to
Why didn't appear. You appear on October 10th?
Because I was told that since they'd entered default, it was a moot question.
You were told by whom?
Again, the judge's secretary or court clerk. The issue of Goldman and Company is not a legal fiction. It's not any kind of a fiction. It's a corporation that existed for a number of years. They were doing business as Goldman and Company for parent company of Check Enforcement.
But it no longer exists.
I think it's still incorporated. I don't know that they're still doing business. I left them in January of this year.
Well, you said existed. That's past tense.
Well, like I said, I don't know what their legal status is right now. I just don't work for them anymore. The bottom line is I was not the proper party. I didn't
send... Well, when you left, when did you leave?
January 2002, Your Honor.
And were they still in business?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Phillips says they didn't exist when he brought
I suggest
suit.
He should check with the Secretary of State for the state of New Jersey and
well, that's a different question, not whether it has some piece of paper in a file somewhere, but whether it is whether it was in business conducting this collection business. When did it stop doing that?
It was still doing it in January of 2002 when I was there, Your Honor, when I left. I think on the 11th or the 12th of December. What their legal status is with the state of New Jersey, I no longer know. I work for a different company now.
Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Your case will be taken under advisement.